Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From newsounds.org and the studios of WNYC in New York, this is the Soundcheck Podcast, our series of live in-studio performances and interviews. I'm John Schaefer. Old folk songs like this one, The Wild Rover, keep coming back around because new generations keep finding new things to do with them and new ways to get in. Take the Irish band Lancum, for example. Their 2019 album, The Live Long Day, was way high up on my list of the best albums of the year because it is full of inventive arrangements of some of these old songs. Dark and drony sort of post-rock affairs. The band Lancum is here in our studio to play some of those songs, beginning with their version of Katie Cruel.
Thank you.
That is the band Lancome, live here in our studio with a version of the folk song Katie Cruel, which you will find on their most recent album, The Live Long Day. Let me introduce you to the members of the quartet, beginning going from left to right. Ian Lynch on Illan pipes and vocals. Ian, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, John.
Rady Pete, who is just now climbing off the floor and back into her seat.
I'm in a seat now. Hello.
After playing harmonium, the little pump organ on Katie Cruel. Cormac McDermida playing the fiddle, also doing vocals. Dara Lynch, Ian's brother, you kind of took that song off, didn't you, for the most part?
Yeah, I sang for about 3 seconds, yeah.
But you play the guitar, which alone of these instruments is not a great drone instrument.
No, although the odd time I would play it with a cello bow to get a drone out of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Rady, I understand that this version of Katie Cruel was originally done for a film, is that right?
So we'd all heard the Karen Dalton version, obviously, of it and loved it, but we got asked to do a soundtrack for a film. It was going to be a short film set in post-apocalyptic Ireland, but it wasn't done yet. They kind of put the cart before the horse, maybe, and asked for the soundtrack first. So we just imagined what a post-apocalyptic Ireland might sound like, and that was part of it.
Well, now, that is the sound world that this band seems to inhabit. You know, you seem to go for the mysterious, the dark, the, you know, the ambient side of the folk music tradition. Ian, is that something that the four of you kind of consciously decided to do?
No, I think it's something that kind of just developed very naturally over the years. You know, we kind of had elements of it, you know, from very early on, and I suppose it was just one aspect of the band that we allowed it to kind of magnify and just follow that trajectory, which brought us to the kind of the sounds we're making now, you know.
So was Lancome just kind of a folk band at the beginning? Or, I mean, did you start as... I would not be surprised at all if you told me you started as a doom metal band or a post-punk band before getting into this stuff.
I think there was always elements of different drone things going on with organs and concertinas and stuff like that. But, we've kind of gone more for that as each album that we've made has gone on. But it would have been, originally we would have been singing a lot more kind of like fast-paced ballads and stuff like that.
Right. So how do you know now when a song is Lancomizable? You know, you have so much to choose from. I mean, Katie Cruel, although its roots are in Scotland, is known as an American folk song.
Yeah.
You've got all the stuff from the British Isles. You don't seem to do too much, the Seanos, the Irish language stuff. But as far as English language stuff goes, you have thousands of songs. So how do you choose?
It depends on the song. Like, I think usually we just like someone will just bring a song that's been interesting them, that they've been singing maybe themselves. It's only then doing it that you figure out, like, does it work or not? Like, does it spark an interest in everybody else? Does it, you know, there's no system for how we find them or how we pick them. It just has to be like good enough, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
So we started with a little bit of your version of The Wild Rover, and Cormac, you know, that's a thrice familiar song.
100%, yeah.
But the four of you have kind of stretched it out, and there's a long, almost cinematic, droning instrumental ending to it.
Absolutely, yeah.
So is that kind of a tale that grew in the telling? You know, working that out as it went along?
Yeah, very much so. I think a lot of it happened in a very kind of quick burst as well. I think there was a lot of cohesion in initially kind of arranging it. It was all done downstairs in Liberty Hall in Dublin. That's where we kind of, it came together surprisingly quickly, and then a lot of work was done in the studio as well, of course, with Spud, who is inside.
Mm-hmm. behind the control board next to our guy, Ed Haber. Takes two people to get the sound, apparently, just so. Because it isn't just the four instruments. I mean, on the album especially, it seems like there's a lot of, you know, production. There are pedals that are being used and all that sort of thing to get that sound world just right. Yeah. So it sounds, Dara, like you said, over the course of several albums that you've been sort of fine-tuning this sound world.
Yeah, I suppose then when Spud came into the mix, it was kind of like a perfect marriage between, like, he'd have the kind of technical know-how to get this kind of sounds that we would have had in our head maybe for the two previous albums. So with his kind of technical knowledge and creative input, actually, we kind of managed to get the sound that we have on this latest album.
Right. So did the four of you all grow up listening to folk music? Or did you come to it? Cormac is saying yes, nodding yes.
Yeah.
Lynch Brothers, yes?
No, we would have had a lot of singing at family parties, like just all sorts of songs, like maybe some ballads and traditional stuff, but mixed in with like pop songs from the 50s and 60s and that kind of stuff. And then, yeah, Cormac and Radio would have grown up more in it with that kind of strictly traditional kind of background.
Really? So Radio, a lot of this stuff was familiar to you?
Well, I grew up playing trad tunes because my sisters and my parents all play as well. So it wasn't really that I was sitting down listening to albums. It was just like I literally was just playing with, I think Cormac had a similar experience where you're just going and playing with people same age as you and people of all ages, like just playing in sessions.
Very social.
That kind of thing, yeah.
Right. The session tradition is wonderful. I went to a session in a little town outside of Limerick once called Castleconnell.
Yeah.
In a pub, and it was just like, pass the guitar around and everybody contributes a song. It's a wonderful way of making music, but also of passing down songs.
Yeah, definitely. It's a very comforting atmosphere or something. I think it's something we all love kind of going back to as well.
It's also kind of how the four of us met.
Really?
Just from going to sessions in Dublin.
But this is not a comforting atmosphere that you create. I mean, it's rather the opposite. Langham seems to be kind of unsettling. You know, that seems to be part of the point. Is like, you may think you know these songs, but do you really? Because a lot of these songs have a dark side. I mean, they're murder stories or ghost stories or lost love. Very few of them are really happy.
It's true.
But there is a track on the album called Bear Creek, which is instrumental and which is kind of, you know, it's a dance number.
It's the closest to a dance number. Yeah.
So is this a little streak of light in the gloom on the record on Live Long Day?
Yeah, this is like offers a bit of a contrast. Yeah.
Not all doom and gloom. You know, it's like some little silver lining on the
then just right back down.
Right. Well, it works for me. The band Langham is here in our new sound studio playing live for us on this edition of the Soundcheck podcast. Let's hear their version. And this actually is more American music.
This is an American old-time tune. Yeah.
So Bear Creek is the name of it. Once again, the band Langham.
Thank you.
once again, the band Lancome, live here in our studio with a version of Bear Creek, which appears on their most recent album, The Live Long Day. Ian, that's actually two tunes, isn't it? Isn't it a medley?
Two tunes, yeah.
Okay. Both of them from the old-timey American songbook?
Yeah.
How did you guys learn them?
Well, I think...
So myself and Cormac would have an interest in old-time music for the last, I don't know how many years, good few years anyway, just slightly fascinated by it. But Cormac's more kind of in that world because he plays fiddle.
Right.
Yeah.
But isn't it, Cormac, kind of difficult to kind of separate the two sides of the Atlantic music?
Yeah, it is. It's especially if you grew up learning some very specific things, you have to just suspend what you would usually do, like especially ornamentation wise and bowing wise. It was very difficult to get the bowing to any kind of point of where it actually sat in, you know, because it's so counterintuitive swing wise.
But a lot of the songs, a lot of our songs, including a lot of our old time music, has its roots in Ireland, Scotland, England anyway, so you know, there's a kind of shared DNA, it
100%,
seems.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And Dara, you started that with the cello bow.
I did, on the
guitar. So your drone contribution came in the piece that is actually the least drony thing on in the set list.
Get it in there somehow.
What is it about the drone? I mean, what's the magic of the drone?
I think it really draws you in, you know. It's a kind of... you know, drone-based music, it's almost like it just blocks every single other thing out, you know. It's existing on all these different frequencies and there's just no room for anything else to get in there. So it's a very meditative kind of mental space you get into. And I just think that to play music where you're able to get into that kind of mind frame, it's just amazing.
Yeah.
It's the best feeling, yeah.
Well, it's also, I mean, it's kind of a sense of suspended time because there is no demarcated rhythm.
Yeah. It allows for things to bounce around it, you know what I mean? Harmony-wise and arrangement-wise. Yeah.
So do you often start your arrangements with a drone? And is that kind of...
We don't have a particular way we do anything, but like we are very partial to a drone. So it usually comes up early in the process. But no, there's no like, it has to be a drone even. We just have a lot of, in fairness, very naturally drone-y instruments though.
Yes.
You know, the Ilan pipes, obviously, there's like...
Right. And Ian, for folks who aren't familiar with the instrument, Ilan means elbow,
yeah.
And so the bag is under your elbow, and that's where the bellows are.
Yeah, so yeah, you've got the bellows here underneath one elbow, then the bag under the other elbow. You're pumping the air in rather than blowing into it as you would with the Scottish Highland pipes.
Right. So where does the name of the band Lancome come from?
So it's a very old ballad, not going back to the 17th century, I think. Known in England as Long Lancome, but there's an Irish version of it called False Lancome, and basically False Lancome is the villain of the piece. He's a bad man.
Okay. So is that's a fairly obscure song? Because I don't...
It would be very obscure, yeah. Okay. Yeah. An old child ballad. You know these child
ballads?
Yeah, sure,
absolutely.
So, it's like an Irish version of a child ballad.
Oh, okay. Well, then not too obscure, because...
Not too obscure, yeah. I mean, I'm sure people would know, like, Long Lancome, and, you know, they maybe would be more familiar with the English version.
Okay. And even in Ireland, you know, as we've said before, there's the Irish language, the Seanó stuff, there's, you know, Wild Rover, Rocky Road to Dublin, all that kind of English language stuff. There are the Traveller songs. I mean, there's lots of different, you know, the tinkers.
There's a lot of different strands to the tradition. Now it's made up of so many different elements, and I think once you start to dive into it, there's no hope of you coming out, you know. Spend the rest of your life there, so...
So... Going back to sort of the sound of the record, there are, you know, there's a song called Ode to Lullaby.
Mm-hmm.
which is full of these kind of swooshing electronic effects. And then there's the Petrovore.
Pride of Petrovore.
Yeah. where there's a moment that almost sounds like you're all attempting to imitate an Australian didgeridoo.
Oh, yeah. A friend was playing the trumpet for that. That's what that noise is.
Okay.
Yeah, I suppose, and Ode to Lullaby as well, we got in a lot of instruments that we wouldn't normally play, like the Cormac was bone vibraphone, that gave that some of the effects. We had pianos, keyboards,
Hammond organs.
An orchestral bass drum that we rented out for the day, so we really just went to town on it, you know, played all the instruments that we could find.
But for touring, for live purposes, this is the band.
We did a few big gigs in Dublin where we got friends of ours, Cormac's brother playing drums, the guy who played trombone on the album, Rady.
I saw Adrian Crowley.
Yeah, he played Mellotron on the album. So he's on the album as well, but he occasionally agrees to play live with us as well.
Adrian's done a set here in our studio. Terrific singer and songwriter.
Absolutely.
And a guy who writes his own songs, and you write some material as well.
Yeah.
And the fun part on first listen to the album was trying to figure out what was original and what was not. Because it sounds pretty clear to me that the idea was not to make the two distinct.
Very distinct, yeah. I suppose, yeah. And then like the more time you spend listening to and being around traditional songs, the more the kind of that kind of aesthetic will enter any songs that you write as well. So, yeah, I don't know. I have heard that people have listened to it and they couldn't be entirely sure whether one of the original songs is original or not.
Just a good compliment, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're comparing it to songs that have withstood the test of centuries.
Absolutely, yeah.
How do you work out those really close, penetrating harmonies?
Lots of time.
Try and error.
Yeah. Cormac has perfect pitch as well, and he sees things in four-part harmony in his brain. So that's very helpful.
Yeah, it is. Cormac, do you have any experience with medieval music, with so-called early music?
I would have heard a bit of Johannes Sock again, because I was briefly in college, but briefly.
We also listened to lots of sacred harp.
Yeah,
music,
what are the sacred harp and stuff? Yeah, yeah,
okay. Yeah, which is all four part as well.
Yeah,
right.
It's true.
Because I mean, there were moments in that arrangement that sort of reminded me of medieval music.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe not Ockeghem, which is a little more florid.
But
sacred harp music here in the States. Wow. So so you guys really do cast a very broad net.
Yeah.
So. The album's called Live Long Day. I mentioned before there are a couple of original tunes. We're going to actually say goodbye with Hunting the Wren. And Rady, although this is an original tune, talking as we were before about the musical DNA, the roots of this song are pretty ancient, aren't they?
Well, it was Ian who wrote this song before we'd written the album material or whatever. And yeah, like the story of it is really fascinating. I didn't know about it at all, which was these women called the Wrens of the Curragh. And they were like a community of women living outside the army encampment there. And yeah, I'd never heard the history of this at all. I saw one article on it in a magazine in the months like since I've heard about it. But otherwise, I think it's kind of a little known part of Irish history.
I wasn't even talking about it. I was thinking more of the literal hunting of the wren on St. Stephen's Day. What are you talking about? I want to hear more about this.
Ian actually used that the symbolism of that. So obviously there's hunting the wren where it's like, I think they used to actually kill a wren on Stephen's Day.
Yeah.
But then the meaning of it now is that on Stephen's Day you go and you like basically play music dressed up in these kind of like you disguise yourself and you go and play music and basically get money off people to like raise money for the wren's funeral. But I don't think anyone kills a wren anymore. I hope not. But the subject matter of the song is actually that what I was saying earlier was actually about this group of women who, what year would have that been?
Like, kind of all throughout the 19th century, from about the 1820s, 1830s, right up to the 1890s, I think, there were these women, and they called them the wrens of the Curra, basically because they lived in these little nest-like shelters. They would, you know, kind of dig up a hole in the ground and put some gorse bushes over, and that's how they lived, you know. So there's roughly between, I don't know, 50 and 100 women living in this community at any one given time. And they had, like, you know, they living in a very communal way, and they had, like, kids living there and stuff with them, you know, but lived a very, very harsh life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they were known as the Wrens of the Curra.
The Wrens, yeah.
Huh. But the image of hunting the wren, you know, the wren, Rady, you actually sing the line, you know, the wren is a small bird, but the cause of much woe. I mean, all through Northern Europe, the wren, for some reason, has a pretty bad rep.
Isn't it something to do with the Bible, that the wren betrayed Jesus or something like that?
Yeah, it's like a kind of religious folk tale about the wren. I think it was like St. Stephen was hiding on the Roman soldiers in a bush, and the wren came along and sang on the bush and betrayed where St. Stephen was, and he was killed. So I think that's the kind of the reason why people said that's why they hunted the bird on Stephen's Day.
And I had heard a story of, like, God wanted to see which bird could fly the highest. You know the story?
Yeah.
And so the eagle, of course, soars way up high, unaware that this tiny wren is perched on his back.
Yeah.
And therefore, the wren is the cheating but still winning member of the bird family.
So I think, yeah, he waited till the eagle flew all the way up and then flew a little bit higher. Yeah. And that's why they said the wren was the king of the birds.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Good stuff. and you know, it's a beautiful song. We'll use a little bit of it to wrap things up. It's on the album called The Live Long Day. The band is Lancum. I love this record, and I'm so glad that the four of you were able to come in and play for us today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is Soundcheck. That'll do it for this edition of the Soundcheck podcast, but as always, there's much more to be found on our website. Lots of other performances, video shot in the studio, the daily gig alerts, weekly music roundups, new sound shows, and more. Check it out at newsounds.org. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. This session was engineered by Edward Haber. Our associate producer is Karen Havlick. I'm John Schaefer. Thanks for being with us. Broken.